What's up, guys? Welcome to Rockin' a Hard Place, episode 2.
Episode 2, here we are. We're glad you guys have tuned in today. We're excited to talk to you about a lot of fun stuff.
It's going to be better than Star Wars episode 2, as we established in the last podcast.
Yeah, on today's episode of Rockin' a Hard Place, we're going to talk about going on tour for the first time ever. We're going to talk about putting thousands of miles on our van and trailer.
Yeah, lots of exciting new things in our career, from our first tour to living in a van down by the river.
Down by the river, yes.
And inadvertently dragging a deer carcass from Texas to LA.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Episode 2, Rockin' a Hard Place.
Hey, I'm John Micah. Welcome to Rockin' a Hard Place. James, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm doing good today. This is exciting. I like this. This is fun.
New podcast.
That's right. New podcast.
It's happening.
I just got off the phone with my cousin Jocelyn. Shout out.
Okay.
We live in the same town. I'm from Oregon City, Oregon, which is part of Portland. And my family lives real close to me, and they have a farm. And I just went and visited them the other day. I actually always go over there and get eggs and stuff, of course. But they got some new critters on the farm. They got two turkey chicks. So two baby turkeys. They're named Pilgrim and Elf. Can you guess what they're for?
Are they going to be full size by Thanksgiving?
Yes. They will be there for dinner, so to speak. So, you know, I went and looked at these turkeys. I'd never seen like turkey chicks before. And honestly, they look nothing like an adult turkey. They look a lot like baby chicks, but with like slightly longer neck.
Yeah.
And they're real pretty, actually.
Adult turkeys are not pretty, though.
Not really. I mean, they have that awesome, you know, majestic tail that arches out and fans out, and that's pretty cool looking.
Yeah.
But they got that weird purple, red, ugly bobble thing on their neck, and, you know, who knows what that's for.
That reminds me of a story of our friend Jeff Barrios.
Okay.
Who,
Barrios, founder of Truth Drums. Yes. A lot of bands play Truth Drums. Shout out to Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah. Great drums. Had numerous Truth drums on our stage over the years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're awesome. Yeah. So Jeff Barrios, who also at the time lived in Portland, he likes to hunt a lot, as do I. We both hunt.
Yes.
Well, one of our friends said, "Hey, you can hunt on my property. Mm-hmm. Like, we've got too many turkeys. Come help us with our turkey problem."
What a problem.
So apparently, as the story goes, as I recall, was they came home and all of a sudden out of the woods in full camo and face paint and the whole deal, just Jeff Barrows just like emerges. Totally freaked him out because they didn't know he was there. He's like full camoed out.
It's like a Born Identity movie.
He said I could come hunt the turkeys. So
he didn't tell them, "Oh, I'm coming on this day. I'll be there."
Somehow they didn't know he was there at that moment.
That's funny.
And it was really funny. The way, however, that communication happened, it was really funny. So
nice.
Might have to fact check that one because it's been a minute.
Yeah, maybe we'll call Jeff
up. Yeah, but it was, as I recall, it was a very funny story.
Yeah.
It made me laugh because I could totally see that happening. Especially hunting, you know, you're hiding in the woods in camo.
That's right. Yeah.
And turkeys have really great eyesight. So you have to be like super still.
That is an unknown turkey fact.
Yeah. They're kind of tough, which is why you got to like call them in and make your little calling noises and try and get them to come close. And
interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is apocryphal or not. This is just like kind of an urban legend, but another fun fact about turkeys that springs to mind. What a random way to start our show, by the way. Turkey facts on Rockin' a Hard Place. Okay. Hashtag turkey facts. Maybe. Hey, there you go. Listeners, you tell us some of your favorite hashtag turkey facts when you listen to the episode. That would be great. Okay, What I was thinking of was, I always heard growing up that if your turkeys are outside, and this is for like domestic turkeys, I guess, but if they're outside and it starts raining, have you heard of this?
No.
They like look up in the air and their mouths open and they literally like drown because they just fill up with water and die. That sounds pretty far-fetched, but yeah. I've heard that my whole
life. But how do we still have turkeys then? Wouldn't they all die if it rains?
Especially Oregonian turkeys. Yeah, yes,
there's lots of turkeys in Oregon. Yes. So maybe they just hide under the trees so they don't actually look
up
and
drown. Or maybe all those turkey owners are real dutiful about getting them into the shelter every time it rains.
But the wild turkeys are all over the place. So
wild turkeys know better.
Yeah,
animals in the wild have way
better. Oh, they're smarter. So you're saying it's the domesticated ones that don't know any better.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. You guys will have to tell us if you are a turkey farmer. Please email us.
If you are a turkey farmer.
Help us fact check.
Yes, please.
Our turkey facts.
Hashtag turkey facts.
Because Google and Wikipedia are not 100% right, in case you didn't know that.
Speaking of Wikipedia, I could just make that a yes. widely circulated fact.
I bet we could go into Wikipedia right now mm-hmm. and look up turkey.
Did you know that if turkeys look up in the sky while it's raining, they will drown?
I hope somebody puts that in there this week. I'm going to go on Wikipedia and see if somebody inserted yeah. that. That would be yeah. amazing.
There's another challenge for our listeners. Let's see who does it.
We claim no responsibility for whatever information you may put on the internet.
That's right. What are we talking about today besides turkeys?
Well, man, so last episode we left off really at kind of our first tour,
yeah,
right?
Talking like, about the significance of Tuesday, September 11th, 2001, and what that day meant to us, even in the midst of great tragedy and you know, our nation being in shock and grieving. But it was still a really monumental day for us. And
yeah.
then talked about going up to the studio and finally getting to work with Aaron Sprinkle, our longtime friend, and making music together.
And there was really two segments of that, because we did our first three-song EP.
Right.
That was part of the developmental deal that we did with the label.
I was trying to rack my brain about this. Do you remember the three songs on the EP off the top of your head? I think I remember maybe two of them.
I think it was Tonight.
Yes.
And I think Your Touch was on. See, I could be wrong.
I don't think so. I think
maybe
a
not.
Song called Again was on there.
Oh.
And maybe Vow, like super random.
I kind of thought Pride Away was on there.
I don't
but
know.
I could be wrong.
We
but
need our turkey fact checkers to fact
know.
Check us there.
I actually found.
We probably have it on the
I
shelf.
I found one of those EPs not too long ago.
Wild.
And it like, I was like, whoa, like yeah. I haven't seen this. Because we only printed some for that first tour that
right.
we did.
Yeah.
Because we were going to. Like the whole record wasn't done yet.
Right.
So we only just kind of printed a few so we'd have something to sell and
to
get
sell.
Music out.
Yeah, we had like a t-shirt, a sticker, and the EP.
Yeah. And so that was like, just, we're like, we just need something because we didn't have any music.
Yeah. Yep.
And then we would come back later. So in that first tour, it was kind of interesting because we were so new. Like, we didn't even have a record.
Right.
And yet here we were going on like kind of a big tour.
A big tour, indeed.
And it was super fun. It was really exciting.
Ha! Super fun.
Super fun.
Because we went with the Supertones.
Supertones. Supertones were headlining, and PAX 217
yep.
was opening for them.
Yep.
Good band. I like those guys.
Great band. And we'll get more into that.
Yeah. Slick Shoes.
Slick Shoes.
Punk rock band.
Classic.
Yep. And I have here in my studio a little framed... poster basically.
Yeah.
It's got our first tour pass, my tour pass from mm-hmm. that tour.
Yep.
It's got a flyer, like a tour flyer that they
yeah,
just
like a promotional
flyer.
Flyer.
Yeah. Which is signed by
put
all the bands. Everybody signed
yep.
it and put little notes on it, like yep. a yearbook. And then a photograph of me on stage from that first tour.
Yeah.
And just kind of a little memento from
is
the very
photo,
first one.
That looks like the Norva Theater in Norfolk, Virginia.
It might be.
It looks like the Norva to me.
That was one of my favorite venues.
Because I think it is. Because we also filmed some of the footage for the Tonight video there. And you were wearing that outfit. So I think that's you on stage at the Norva Theater.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great rock venue.
Pretty cool.
We've never been back, actually. We only played that one time on
yeah,
our first
those
tour.
Are really, maybe we should do that.
Yeah. Anyone work at the Norva listening?
20 years
up.
Later,
we'll
come back to
show.
The Norva.
Yeah.
It was a cool venue.
It
I liked
very
it.
Very cool.
Yeah. So that first tour, really exciting, but we were like, we were fresh out of college.
Yeah.
Actually, we kind of dropped out of college.
Yeah. I kind of never started and you guys kind of dropped out. Yeah.
And the crazy thing for me was I was actually on a full ride soccer scholarship at this point. Mm-hmm. So people thought I was,
which was way better than my bowling scholarship.
Your $30 bowling class. Yeah. A lot of people told me I was throwing my life away and, you know, don't be an idiot,
teachers,
finish school. Yeah. Yeah. And especially having a full ride scholarship.
Yeah,
like that's
yeah.
something that people spend, you know, their entire childhood, like working towards mm-hmm. for athletics and things like that. Right. And,
or for some people, it's like a lifeline to be the first one in their family
yeah.
to break out of cycles of, you know, never making it out of, you know, high school education, or it might be their first opportunity to make a big difference for their family.
Yeah. And for me, what was interesting about that season, and I had a really difficult conversation with my parents at that time, because they were like, you know, stay in school.
Right.
Like parents would say, right? And shocking.
Yeah. Wow.
But for me, I remember this conversation with them. I told them, I was like, Mom, Dad, like, I really believe this is what God's doing in my life. I feel called to it. I think I need to do this. And I told them as we were kind of like starting this process, I told them, as I said, I'm not going to just drop out of school and hope for the best.
Right.
I said, I'm not going to do that. But if a legitimate opportunity comes to where we can really do this for real, like I have to go, like I have to know if God opens that door, I have to go through it because I just so strongly feel this is what God's doing in my life. And so for me, it wasn't about school. It wasn't about the scholarship. It was about what God was doing in my life at that season.
Right.
And I told him, I said, if it means I have to pay for my last, I was a junior in college at this point. I said, if I have to pay for my last year and a half of school, I'm okay with that. Like if this totally doesn't work out and it doesn't happen, I'll come back and pay for my last year and a half because I need to know that I followed what God was doing in my life at this season.
Yeah.
And absolutely. If it falls apart, then yeah, maybe I lose my scholarship and I got to pay for school to finish.
Yeah.
But that's where I was. And I was like, I need to know. And here we are 20 years later,
yep.
still doing music.
Yep.
And so I think there was something there.
Yeah.
But I also did come back and finish my degree later with Grand Canyon University on my second scholarship.
Yeah.
My second full ride.
Which was because you listened to the Lord that first time, and we had built sort of an ambassador relationship via Cutlass with Grand Canyon University. They would send reps out on tour with us. And then they kind of came to us and approached us at a really interesting time in our faith journey, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we were praying about starting a nonprofit organization called End of the Age Ministries so that we could do free evangelistic outreach events and stuff. We were praying about, like, what do we do? You know, what's the best way to, like, be in leadership? And we were praying about whether we should go back to school.
Yeah.
And Grand Canyon University approached us and said, hey, we got this funny idea. Maybe you'll go for it, maybe not. But we were wondering if you guys would like to be students here and we could kind of share your story with the students at GCU. And it was an answer to prayer. I mean, when I became a Christian at age 17, one of the first kind of areas that I felt really passionate about was I wanted to go to seminary. I wanted to go study the Bible at a school and like learn how to teach the word and be a pastor. So for me, it was like a dream come true. I loved it.
Yeah. It was really,
it was hard too.
Yeah.
Cause we were on tour all over the world. Well, we'd be in like Tokyo, Japan and be like, oh man, what time is it in Phoenix? I got to turn in this paper right now.
When were we in Tokyo, Japan?
I was there on a layover working on a big project and I was stressed.
On our way to the Philippines.
Yes.
That's how I was like, we've never played Tokyo, Japan.
No, but we
had a layover.
Yeah, yeah. I had a significant chunk of time and I had to finish this paper.
Yeah. 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 And I remember, so that's the other thing about this is interesting is when we were in college the first time at Warner Pacific, and I was playing soccer and getting hurt and a lot of concussions. During that season, there was no such thing as online college. Like you had to go to class.
Yeah.
on campus.
Yeah.
So this online education didn't really exist. When we came back around with Grand Canyon later, online school was pretty popular.
Yeah.
And it allowed us to go to school while we were on the road traveling. Yeah. So like literally on the tour bus, I remember you and I being like, we need internet. We got a paper I got to turn in before midnight.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're like trying to find internet access because our cell phone access wasn't working or whatever, you
know,
and we're like stressing out trying to get our paper turned in time. And then the other funny thing was because Arizona doesn't observe daylight savings time. We were always trying to figure out if it was 11 o'clock or midnight that we had to turn in our paper.
Depending on what time of year it was. Yeah,
or whatever time zone we were in, adjust. But we, because they weren't changing. And so you were constantly like, oh, wait, which one is it? So super funny. But
just as a sideline, I'd like to let our listeners know that we are being joined once again, like on
our
episode
mascot.
One, by Buddy the dog.
Yeah.
On episode two, he's here again. And Cooper, your cat.
Yeah, they both just walked. Buddy literally broke in by pushing the door open, and he heard us talking in here. Buddy is a golden retriever, and he is almost 7 years old.
Wow.
He'll be seven in November, I think.
Yeah.
And he's had lots of adventures with me. He's a good dog. But you can probably hear him panting over here.
That's going to be lovely in the podcast. Yeah.
What is that noise?
Hey, it's real life.
That's my dog.
Yep. It's real life, guys.
Real life.
We got dogs, too.
And you've probably, I don't know, it's probably, there's been some Instagram posts here and there of
my dog,
of our pets.
Oh yeah. We made an Instagram page for my golden doodle. Her name is Luna. She's the best. Anyway, let's get back on track.
So school,
dogs are so distracting.
we both did end up finishing our degrees later on, but ultimately in that early season we just needed to follow what God was doing and chase that. And it was really actually incredible to see over, you know, and this story will continue to unfold as we talk about
it.
But, and then that we recorded that EP and went on our first tour. But that wasn't the only thing that was happening in my life at that time.
Yeah.
My wife now, Shannon, and I at that time had already been dating for about 6 years.
Right.
I met her when I was 14 years old. we actually met on a
Where'd you meet? Yeah.
And we met on a family camp in the San Juan Islands.
Okay.
So both of our families were on this family camp, and
For our listeners, where are the San Juan Islands?
It's in the Puget Sound. So if you go in the state of Washington, say like about where Seattle is,
right,
and you go a little bit north and west, it's a chain of islands that basically it's kind of a protected sound with all these chain of islands, and there's ferries that run all between there,
right,
and
you can go to the islands,
and then you can go from like Seattle to there, or you can go up to even Victoria, BC,
Vancouver Island,
and it's all kind of like connected there.
It's a very cool thing to go do, actually.
It's really
and
neat.
Over on those islands, you know, you'll see pods of orcas swimming around.
Yes.
It's really incredible.
Yeah. So Anacortes is where the main ferry leaves in Washington, and speaking of orcas, we went sea kayaking.
Cool.
And I was in a kayak when a pod of orcas came through.
Wow.
It was the coolest thing.
Wow.
Like they just like they started coming up and
breaching.
Breaching and blowing their spout, you know.
That's
and
awesome.
I was like, and all the people on shore were like, look, there's orcas. I was like, I can see.
I can tell.
I'm right here. It was super cool.
And also a throwback to episode one, we were talking about Aaron Sprinkle and where he grew up in the Seattle
area,
Vashon Island, one of those islands.
Yeah. That's where he grew up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was cool. Again, how all this stuff like clicks together sometimes. You're like, that's so weird. It's crazy. Cause Vashon Island is, there's not very many people that live on that island.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool that like part of my origination story was very much geographically and, you know, the same spaces.
Linked.
But anyway, so this family camp we were doing, we actually biked from island to island and camped. And so we had like some support vehicles. It was a church family camp. So they had like vans and trailers and stuff to haul all of our gear. And then we would ride the ferry and then bike to the campground and set up our tents and camp. It was really cool, really active, just neat way to see the islands.
Sweet.
And, the guy that was supposed to lead worship, who was also the guy that taught me how to play guitar, Steve Hopkins.
Cool.
He sliced his hand.
Yikes.
Like, I think he was cutting a coconut or something like that.
Wait, what? Yeah. On the San Juan Islands?
Well, he wasn't there yet, or he was on his, I don't remember. He cut himself really bad, sliced his hand open, and like he couldn't come play.
Yeah.
And so I'm on this trip and they're like, does anybody have a guitar? Does anybody know how to play worship?
Wow.
And like,
how many people on the trip?
120 people or something like that.
Out of that many people?
Nobody.
What?
Except for me.
Except for Jay.
And I am 14 years old, yep. And I have this nylon string classical guitar that my mom had laying around the house. It was the first guitar I ever played.
Wow.
Because I just was like, it just happened to be at our house. So when I picked up the guitar, that's what was there.
So that's like what you learned chords on and learned how to play guitar.
Yeah. And so not long after that, I got my first steel string normal acoustic
Alvarez,
guitar.
Right?
It was an Alvarez. Yeah. Yeah. Dude, it was like $120 or something.
I remember that guitar.
And, but yeah, so here I am 14 years old with a classical string guitar and they're like, help, can you play?
Yeah.
And I was like, I guess so. Okay.
Did you have puberty voice going on at this time?
I was 14. I was probably,
you were cool. You were good.
I think
I was good.
But yeah, so I was leading worship, on that for a few days till they got somebody else in, or maybe even Steve made it finally and got bandaged up or something. I can't remember. But yeah, so I had a couple days though where I had to be the guy and that was terrifying. And the other funny thing is, and I don't know why I remember this, but they did an icebreaker at the camp and like you drew a name out of a hat and you had to like go talk to that person and tell them like three fun facts or something like that. Cause they want everybody to meet each other, kind of know some names and mix up groups. So you didn't have like clicks happening between families, right? So of course I drew a name out of a hat and it was Shannon's younger sister.
Okay.
Who is the same. So Shannon's actually a year and a half older than me and her younger sister is the same age as me. We're in the same grade.
Right.
So here I am as a 14 year old boy that's like getting ready to go into high school.
Mm-hmm.
So eighth grade going into ninth grade. And of all the people I could have drawn out of the hat, it's a 14 year old girl. And I was like, oh, this is going to be so awkward.
Like, so you weren't vibing that. You were like scared?
Yeah. I was just like, I was like, oh no. So that was my introduction to her family.
Nice.
That was the first introduction that we had. It was super awkward.
And if I remember correctly, Shannon and Crystal, her sister and their family had kind of just started going to the church y'all were at only
fairly
like a year or two before, right?
Yeah. And so anyways.
So unknown to you, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. But through that camp, Shannon and I actually started hanging out. There's a group of kids. We all kind of became friends and started hanging out that. Cause we're all camping together, playing cards, riding bikes, you know? And then a couple of my buddies that were on the trip, like, kind of, you know, friends, knew friends and like their older brother was friends
with
this person.
People passed notes for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, he likes you. Do you like him? Circle yes or no.
So that's where we first started hanging out. Cool. But I was going to my freshman year. She was going to be a junior. So I was like, that's never happening.
Yeah.
You know, in high school, those things, you're like,
never. That seems insurmountable for sure. Yeah.
And we ended up going to the same Christian school, that next year, Cascade Christian High School in Jacksonville, Oregon. And ran track together. And her dad helped coach the track team. So I remember being over at her house a bunch, just like after track practice, grabbing pizza. And then we'd go like to church on a Wednesday night Bible study.
Awesome.
You know? It's like, we didn't track practice. Like, and so I just kind of ended up hanging out with her and her family and just through all of that, through track. And, and our relationship just grew. We got to be really good friends.
Do you remember when you first started to fall in love with her?
Well, I think I was there before I knew she was there.
Okay.
But I was like, I don't know.
Yeah. Nervous if it'll be returned.
Yeah, of course. Like, and she's older and
that's
know.
The game when you're teenage years, you're like, I don't know.
And when I first met her, she had a really serious boyfriend already.
Right.
And so, that ended up ending. And then I was like, oh, maybe there's a chance.
Maybe there's a chance.
you're telling me there's a chance. So we ended up actually, I was a sophomore when we started dating. And the funny thing though, is at the very, like in that period of time, she had her driver's license and I did not. I got my driver's license as soon as I turned 16. But for a lot of this, I was 15.
Yeah.
And she was 16. And so she drove me around all over the place. I was constantly hitching rides with her. But it was a fun era. We ended up starting dating my sophomore year, and we dated for about 6 years. Finally we got married, in January of 2002. Mm-hmm. So we celebrated our 20th anniversary just recently. Mm-hmm. Went to Mexico.
Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
Been there for all 20, so super proud
you
of
have.
You.
Yep.
Love you guys.
We went to Cancun for our 20th.
Cancun.
20th anniversary. I had never done Cancun, so it was fun. It was a good time. So we got married January 2002, and we went on our honeymoon to Florida. And we did a Disney cruise,
Florida.
Yeah.
How far east had you ever been up to that point in your life?
Louisiana.
Oh yeah. Family.
Yeah.
Family
yeah.
Stuff.
My grandfather lived in Louisiana, and I think that was the farthest east I'd been. I'd never been to the actual East Coast.
Right.
So Florida was my first, time to be all the way on the East Coast. And I couldn't believe how warm the ocean was because the Pacific is cold everywhere. Like even in San Diego, it's still not warm.
Yeah. People don't realize that you see the beaches, the California thing.
Yeah.
It's hot on the beach.
Yeah.
It's real cold in the Pacific Ocean.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, but Florida's not that way. You get in the water and you're like, oh, this water is like as warm as the air. This is not refreshing. I got in the water to cool off.
Same temperature.
It's the same temperature. So that was like mind boggling to me. So we got married, and we had asked people, we knew at this point when we got married and went on our honeymoon, we had just signed our record deal. We knew we were going to be going on tour.
Right.
And our plan was like, we're going like on tour for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a month to month apartment rental. And it was in a really ghetto spot. Like we didn't really want to stay there.
Yeah. Is this the apartment that was like right by the train tracks?
Yes.
And so loud.
Yes.
And your truck got broken into.
Yes. And our laundry got stolen.
Your laundry got stolen.
Yeah.
Who steals someone else's laundry? Come on.
So when I moved into this apartment complex, we're literally moving our stuff in.
I remember.
And a guy comes walking out from his apartment and he goes, "Welcome to hell." And I was like, nice to meet you too.
That is foreboding.
Yeah. And he wasn't wrong.
Yeah. Goodness.
So there was a train track that ran right behind this apartment complex. Yeah. And there was no air conditioning either.
Right.
So we would open our windows.
Some of our listeners are like, wait, hold up. No air conditioning?
Yeah.
You got to be kidding me. Here's a thing you might not know about the Pacific Northwest, especially at that time.
Yeah.
Generally our summers, we do get some hot days, high 80s, 90s, sometimes up into hundreds now, but most people didn't really have AC in their houses and stuff. I myself, we just got AC in our house last year.
Yeah. Still.
First time, yeah.
2021.
Yeah.
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 Crazy.
We lived there for 16 years now.
Yeah. And there's usually like a week or two, it's really hot.
Yeah.
And then other than that, it's fine.
Yeah.
I grew up without air conditioning as well in Southern Oregon where it gets even more hot.
Yeah, that's true.
So there's no air conditioning in this apartment complex.
Yep.
Train tracks directly behind it. So we'd open our windows at night to get the cool air in.
Right.
And the problem
was. Yeah, that's the other key is like here, because the humidity isn't holding on to the temperature all night long. So here in the Pacific Northwest, the temperature drops 30 degrees at night.
Yeah.
And so you do get cool air coming in your house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the windows are open and you'd fall asleep. And then in the middle of the night, jolted awake because there was a crossing also right there. So the train would just lay on its horn.
Burn.
And so you would like just jump out of bed, like heart racing, adrenaline.
I'm picturing your apartment shaking.
Yes. I mean, you
everywhere.
Hear that. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the train is so loud, the horn's honking. And when you're sound asleep, like you don't know what's happening and you swear you're about to get run over by the train. Like your body is like, I'm about to die.
What's happening?
Yeah.
Cause it's in my apartment.
This train is, I'm laying on the train tracks right now. I don't know how I got here, but I'm about to get run over.
A damsel in distress.
Yeah. And then until you finally like wake up enough to go, oh, it's right over there.
Yeah.
But it is so loud.
Goodness.
So, cause I think about it. If you're 20 yards from a train that is blowing its whistle.
You'll feel it through your whole body.
And your window's open, yeah. And it's just right there. Like, yeah. That's what I experienced on a nightly basis.
Right.
And the other funny thing is we were so poor at this time. We were newly married. We didn't have money for furniture. So I bought,
I remember
at
this.
Big Five Sporting Goods, I think, an inflatable couch.
Yep. And it was clear.
And that was the only furniture we had because yep. It was a studio apartment. We had our bed, yep. Our kitchen, an inflatable couch with a little television.
Yep.
And that's
I'm
where
picturing
we lived.
You guys kind of like blowing into a balloon to fill it up. Like, did you have to put your mouth on the air piece and just blow up this whole couch yourself?
Well, I do remember it being like a
pass out every 5 minutes.
Like, you know, the inner tubes that you like float in the pool with,
sure.
Like,
yeah, totally.
They have the little clear valve on it. Yep. That you got, I think it was something like that, but I don't
yeah,
know,
that's
maybe,
what I remember.
Yeah. I think we must've gotten a compressor or something to fill it up. Cause that would have taken forever.
Yes, yeah. And lots of brain cells.
Yeah. but yeah, so that was that's where we lived.
So what you're saying is you weren't all that sad to leave this apartment to go on tour.
We did not want to stay there. Yeah. And so then we're already dealing with that on a daily basis, the train, then my truck gets, I had a stereo that I had put in my truck, when I was like in college. And like subs and, you know, I liked music.
Cool guy.
And so somebody broke into my truck, stole all my stuff, but yeah. they ripped out like the entire dash getting
yeah.
it out. So it like just destroyed the entire car, yeah. broke the windows out. Like it was a huge bummer.
Here's another callback. Didn't they also take your CD visor from the,
yes, they stole all
how
my CDs.
Dare they?
And that was devastating in
they
those days.
They took 5 Goo Goo Dolls CDs from me.
I do like the Goo Goo Dolls.
Yeah, all 5 of those CDs.
Yeah.
I'm teasing you.
Yeah, I actually had several Christian bands there, which the solace to me was like, well, maybe they'll hear the gospel and music. And
yeah.
Maybe their life will change.
Maybe.
After stealing all my stuff. Grr. But yeah, and then it was like literally days later, our laundry got stolen out of the washing or the dryer. Like yeah. we were, because it's community washer dryer in the yeah. apartment complex. And we were just like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, this yeah. is ridiculous. So anyways, we got back from our honeymoon 3 days after we got back from our honeymoon. We moved all our stuff into storage.
Yep.
And went on tour, our yeah. first tour.
Yeah.
But the problem was this first tour with the Supertones, we actually bought onto the tour. And this is actually a really common thing with bands who are brand new, is they'll pay money to get exposure on a bigger tour.
Right.
And so that's what we were doing. The label fronted it for yeah. us, but basically we paid the Supertones to take us out.
Right.
But in that payment, we also got bunks on their tour bus.
Right.
So we got to ride on the tour bus and kind of just travel with them. And,
right.
and that,
which was great. Cause we didn't own a van and trailer at the time.
No,
like, you know, we weren't prepared to like go on tour.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we had to jump on this big tour with the Supertones and ride along.
Yep.
Basically.
So we just jumped in, and then the label, cause we didn't even have like professional quality instruments.
Yeah. yeah.
It was real bad.
Yep.
The label actually helped us buy some like
yeah.
legitimate amps.
So I remember we working with Aaron Sprinkle in Seattle on the very first project, he took us over to this super cool guitar shop called Emerald City Guitars.
Yeah.
And I've worked with them dozens of times over the years, bought and sold guitars with them. And I love those guys. So shout out to Emerald City Guitars in downtown Seattle. And so we went there, and the label, you know, Brandon Ebel basically bought me this really beautiful Mesa Boogie dual rec Tremoverb. And that's a guitar amplifier. That's a rare model now. They don't even yeah. make that anymore. So I still have that at home, actually.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Been traveling with you for yep. 20 years.
They helped us get some nicer guitars. That
yeah.
led to us getting sponsored by Schecter Guitars. That was
yeah.
our first like big breakthrough. And well, then I got sponsored by Mesa Boogie after
yeah.
we started touring.
Well, I remember, tangent here again,
sure.
but I remember the Your Touch video getting played on mainstream. Back then, music TV stations actually played music videos.
Mm-hmm.
Like MTV was music television.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
VH1 played music videos. And there was the Canadian Much Music, I think, that
oh,
was
yeah.
like...
Right.
And Your Touch actually got a lot of play on that one, I think.
Right.
Probably the most on Much Music. And I remember Schecter seeing that video, seeing the ultra slow guitar spin. And we were playing Schecters for that.
Right.
And they were like, that's awesome. We're
yeah.
gonna sponsor those
I
guys.
Was playing the Schecter C1 Elite at the time, yeah. which was a really cool guitar.
Because we had, I think we bought our first Schecters.
Right, right.
And then
Brandon bought me that guitar and that Mesa Tremoverb.
Yeah. And then they saw that and they were like, that's awesome. And so we ended up getting sponsored by those guys and
yeah.
had a lot of Schecters for a few years there.
Oh yeah.
Which was really neat. And that, the other thing that was interesting about that was their community was very different than the Christian community.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And it was kind of cool to bridge that gap a bit.
I've experienced that a handful of times with the gear companies I've endorsed over the years. Mm-hmm. You know, we represent sort of a unique opportunity to them because we are a rock band, but we're in a much different scene than a lot of the other bands totally. That are working with. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of cool that I felt like to be able to just work with those guys and,
yep.
and be different and yep. have that be okay. And
yeah.
I think they looked at us like, you guys are strange, like you and all your Christian stuff.
Yeah.
But hopefully, I mean, it's funny how a lot of times years later you'll have stories come back where they're like, man, that actually really impacted me.
Totally.
And so, yeah, it was kind of a neat season, but anyways, back to the original story. So we're getting ready to go on our first tour. My wife and I just got married. We're getting on a tour bus, but there's five of us in the band and there's five bunks. And I just got married and I was like, I'm not going to leave my wife at home for months after we just got married. And so we had actually, when we got married, we're like, hey, don't give us gifts. We're moving into a storage unit. Like, you know, we're not going to.
Yeah. We don't need a toaster.
We don't need stuff.
Right
yeah.
Now.
A toaster's not going to help yeah. us. It's going to actually be a problem.
Right.
So about a lot of people just were generous and gave us money.
Right.
Instead of buying $100 toaster, they just gave us $100.
$100 toaster.
I don't know. We don't.
That must be some toaster, okay. My friend.
Okay. Well, we have a toaster oven, which those are more, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, but it's,
adjusted
it's
for inflation.
Inflation. Yeah.
A toaster was
yeah.
probably $20 back then.
If that. Yeah. 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 That was a lot. Yeah. Stuff was way cheaper back then.
Yeah.
Remember when gas
Let's go
was,
back in time.
Remember when gas was 99 cents?
I do
a gallon?
Remember that.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was nice.
That was nice.
And meanwhile, somebody's like, when I was
yeah.
first driving, it was 39 cents.
I remember when they invented gasoline.
Yeah. The good old days. So I was like, I don't want to leave my wife right away. Like, what are we going to do? So we used the money that we had been given for our wedding to rent a car and drive to all of the shows on the first
yeah.
tour, which was, if you know anything about the way that tour buses go and the way that these tours operate,
work. Yep.
Anyone that knows that is like, you're crazy.
Right.
And that was
because
the reaction.
We're driving at night, all night long. Cause you know, we play the show in the evening. The show doesn't wrap up till 10 PM, 11 PM. Then we got to pack down. We got to, you know, get everything loaded up and then get on the road. And we're driving sometimes 300, 400, 500 miles sometimes
yeah.
in between the next show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so drive all
you
night.
You guys just followed along behind the bus.
Yes.
In a rental car.
In a rental car. So
do you remember the car?
I don't.
It was silver. I remember that.
Yeah. I don't. It was a rental car. They're yeah. all the same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Silver rental
yeah,
car.
Yeah. Silver rental car. They're all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we just followed the bus and yeah, driving all night.
Yeah.
And Shannon often would sleep, you know, in the passenger seat. I can't sleep in cars. So when she would drive, I was just like, oh, shoot.
Yeah.
This is a bummer.
Yeah.
I'm really tired. We actually shared, I had a bunk on the bus because
mm-hmm.
So as soon as we would get to a venue where we would split time sleeping in that bunk because it was a bed
wow.
available for us at the venue. So I'd be like, we don't sound check for 4 hours. I'm going to sleep.
Wow.
And so I would sleep. And then a lot of times while we were sound checking and doing interviews and all of that kind of stuff, Shannon would sleep.
Right.
And then
up until showtime ish
yeah.
or dinner time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we would roll that next
yeah.
night. And so anytime we had a day off.
That is a chaotic life.
Yeah.
Bro.
Yeah. Well, and so here's
especially
the other
for
thing.
A brand new marriage.
Brand new marriage. And when I remember when we showed a bus call the very first night.
Yep.
We're in Nashville getting
Ice
ready
storm.
To roll. And
do you remember that?
I forgot about that, but
yeah.
yes.
Clear in the afternoon. And then all of a sudden, snow, ice, the if you live in Nashville, you'll know this street, but Demumbrian Street was like literally covered in ice and it's like a nice downhill. We were just like running escapades. And sliding down the street, you remember? Us and Pax 217 and it was so funny.
So, yeah, so I remember bus call. I'm like, "All right guys, I'll see you at the show." Like, 'cause we're all on the bus kind of talking and hanging out, and they were like, "What? No, like we're rolling, dude." And I'm like, "No, I'm driving." Yeah. And they're like, "Shut up, get on the bus." And I'm like, No,
really, I'm driving.
Really, I'm driving. And they're like, "Dude, quit joking around. We need to leave." I was like, "No, I'm not joking. I'm driving. I'll meet you guys there."
Wow.
And then everyone was kind of like, "Yeah, we'll see how long that lasts." Because they knew what I was in for. And this was our first tour.
Totally.
And they were like, "He has no idea what he's in for."
So you plugged in the coordinates on your GPS in your iPhone.
No. Nope. That did not exist.
Not at all.
MapQuest.
Printed off directions from MapQuest.
Yes. And we had Rand McNally, those maps.
Classic.
I used those a lot.
Those are better than MapQuest.
Yes. So we actually used those probably even more because MapQuest wasn't great.
No.
But yeah, so the Rand McNally.
MapQuest was like that episode of The Office where Michael Scott and Dwight drive that car into the lake. It's like, "Don't turn here." No, it says turn here.
Yeah.
That's what MapQuest was
MapQuest
like.
MapQuest definitely took us to the wrong place more than once. So we use the Rand McNally a lot. And back then you had to actually plot your route. You'd look at it and be like, "Okay, this freeway runs here. I think if we go on this road, we can cut some time off." Mm-hmm. Like you had to like really think through it and figure it out.
It was like doing a little, like a maze, like on a crossword book or something.
So we'd plot our routes and figure out where we're going and write down directions so I didn't miss a turn, you know, like, "Hey, exit 295, like you got to take that exit to get on highway 50 or what, you know, like, and you had to pay attention. Now we just like wait for Siri to tell us turn right. Yeah. So we're driving behind the bus. And again, we don't have a lot of money. We just have money from our wedding that's helping us afford this rental car. But there was some friends of ours that, had gone to our church in Oregon that had moved to Nashville. And so when we were coming out there, they were like, "Hey, we just want to help you guys. How can we help?" And we're like, "Well, the tour comes back to Nashville every once in a while. Like, we don't have a place to stay when we're in Nashville." And they're like, "Well, just stay with us."
Right.
And we're like, "Awesome." And so.
Wow. Okay. I did not remember that.
Yeah.
Because the rest of us would go stay at Bob Mead's house, my dad. We would go stay out at my dad's house, the other four of us.
Yeah. And so my wife and I would stay, and they were kind of in the Cool Springs Boulevard area where later we would do.
Was that the Carruthers?
Yes.
Them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the Carruthers.
Yeah.
Later on, we would spend a ton of time in that area, but this was our first experience there. And so they were super gracious.
So Cool Springs, that's south of Nashville, Tennessee, a little bit. It's like one of the big kind of suburb areas, big neighborhoods. Everywhere.
Yeah. And there was a lot of Christian music offices and things in that area. So we stayed with them, and like they'd feed us and let us stay there. And because there were times on that tour, we had like 3 or 4 days off in Nashville.
Right.
And we would just sleep. I mean, just sleep.
Couldn't get enough, I bet.
Yeah. And kind of try and refresh as much as we could. And then off we go again and drive. And we did it. We made it through the whole tour, drove the whole thing. And it was actually like, it was really hard, but it was also like there were some really neat moments too.
Cool.
And I remember we splurged one time and we got like a hotel at the America's Best Inn or something. And, but we had a day off and we were kind of close to Niagara Falls, and I'd never seen Niagara Falls and Shannon had never seen Niagara Falls. We're like, "Let's go just get a hotel and go to Niagara Falls." Like,
awesome.
We're like an hour from there.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did. And we went up there and went to Niagara Falls. And so there were those moments throughout that were like really cool memories, that we got to share. And the other thing that was interesting is we spent the first couple months of our marriage in a car together, just talking.
Right.
Like hours and hours just driving together.
So it was difficult, but there was a lot of really great things that came out of it for sure.
Yeah. And we're also on our first tour, which was super exciting.
Right.
But we're watching this thing that we had so much passion and excitement about taking shape.
Yeah.
But it was a hard way to start a marriage.
For sure.
Like right out of the gates, ladies, I don't know how you feel about jumping in a car with your newly married husband on a music tour and driving all night every night. Like, I think most girls would be like,
no. Yeah.
I think I'll stay home.
You
go do your thing. And so, but that's kind of Shannon, she's just like, super loyal and just like,
yeah,
I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in. And she's been that way
the whole time.
The whole time.
Absolutely.
And she actually, behind the scenes, you guys wouldn't know this because she's not ever on stage, but she's done all of the business management,
like bookkeeping
yeah. stuff, keeps us like in line with the IRS and making sure that our taxes are paid and
yeah.
our books are, and she's just awesome with Excel and spreadsheets and QuickBooks and has
and just patient and understanding and kind and,
yeah.
and helpful in all the ways we've ever needed.
Yeah.
I mean, really integral to what we have done yeah. for 20 years.
And honestly, could not have done it without her.
Yeah.
And like, even to this day, I'm like, if God forbid anything were to happen to her, I'm like, I don't even know how I'd log into the accounts I need to log into. like she's so integral to what we do
yeah.
and always has been. And so yeah, through the entire thing, like she was just always there. And in the early days, when we were traveling in the van and trailer and you right. know, a few of us were newly married at that time,
right.
like,
me,
yeah. yeah, her and like Lindsay would just take care of the merchandise
yeah.
while we were getting other stuff set up.
They That's would, right.
they just were
so
helping.
We got married a year after y'all.
Yeah.
We were married in January 2003 and, again, similar story, to be honest, we did not have a lot of money. We were young kids. We were 20. So we had enough to do a honeymoon for 3 days, over to the Oregon coast. So we live in Oregon. We drove about an hour away to have a honeymoon. and then we came back from that and put our stuff in storage bins and hit the road. And Lindsay yeah. went with us everywhere 100% of the time for a long time, for the yeah. first several years, for sure.
And that was about a year after Shannon and I got married.
Right.
First
we got
tour
married
and all
a year
that.
After
yeah.
you.
After that first tour, we went back, like the new record, our full length record wasn't out yet.
Right.
We went into the summer season, as I recall, and summer season, like festival season.
Yep.
So there was nothing booked.
Yeah. Because nobody knew.
Nobody knew who we
yet.
Were.
Yeah.
yeah. So we had nothing going on
yep.
for the summer. So I went and had to work temp jobs.
yeah. I remember
this. So this is the season we were living in that apartment that was horrible.
Right.
So I'm working temp jobs, living in this apartment that we hated. and then I think we finally did move. There was another apartment we lived in for a little while that was better. But,
right.
But so I had the weirdest temp jobs.
Like, yes, you did.
So
top three.
Yeah. So, well, so here's the thing. Shannon and I both were working temp jobs because we're going back on tour in a couple months.
Right.
But right now we don't have any shows, but we need to eat. So she would get like jobs answering phones at an mm-hmm. office,
yeah.
you know, and she'd like play solitaire all day and answer phones. I, on the other hand, was doing things like cleaning out mausoleums at a cemetery.
Oh man.
And I was like, how did I end up here? So we went from being on stage on a tour to I'm like in a mausoleum, like dumping out flowers and
old
cleaning
musty flowers.
Oh,
yeah.
It was weird. It was gross.
When you smell like a bouquet that has kind of expired, shall we say,
yes.
does it bring you right back to that kind of smell memory?
Yeah. Well, and the other problem was because you're in a mausoleum and you're smelling those smells, you're yeah. like, is this just
is this
flowers?
Am I smelling death?
I hope I'm only smelling flowers because I don't know right now because of where I am.
Right.
So yeah, so that was a weird one. I remember this was a while ago. I don't even know if they still make these, but they had phone cards, like you know the phone cards you
oh,
buy
like
at Walmart.
Yeah, call time.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And you could buy a phone card and
right.
It was like an 800 number or whatever, and then you could like call
right.
wherever, and it just was pre-charged. So there was a company that manufactured these, and I had a temp job with them. I did a 10-hour swing shift. We packaged, as I recall, 44,400 because we knew just from like however many a minute we did or whatever. And it was just like an assembly line, just hours for 10 hours straight. It was the most boring, tedious,
mundane,
lose your mind. And what the thing that was the worst about it was when you do the same motion for 10 hours.
Oh yeah. You get real sore.
It starts to hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so like my body was just like weird spots where you're like, oh my goodness, my shoulder is killing me.
Right. And that's one of those kinds of jobs where you could literally like tear your rotator cuff doing that for years and years.
Yeah. Overuse. Right. Yeah. So I did that for a while. And then, probably my least favorite. And part of this was because when you're working a temp job, they don't really care about how long you're there.
Sure.
Like, so some of the bosses that I had were really not nice. And so I had to work at a wine distribution plant, where they were wine cases. They just distribute stuff. Yeah. And so, I remember they backed up a semi truck, full, like 53-foot semi truck.
Yeah.
And they go, hey, we can't get the forklift in there. They packed it too tight. We need you guys to unload it by hand.
Oh.
And I think I calculated I lifted like almost 3 tons that day because each package was like 35 pounds or whatever, just all day. And my back was killing me so bad. Like I was just dying. And the next day, like I was like, I can't lift. Like I literally... I'm wrecked, and I've had back problems over the years.
Yeah.
And so he put me on breakables, which is basically all the, like if you have a case that one of the bottles gets broken, you clean it up, get a new cardboard sleeve, put all the good ones in so you don't throw out the whole case.
Yeah.
And then get rid of the glass and, you know, toss the trash away. But the problem was, I was like, well, do you guys have gloves or anything? Like I'm dealing with broken glass. And he's like, no, you'll figure it out. So I've got like sticky wine,
ew,
glass shards in my hands. Ugh. Like I'm bleeding.
Oh,
like it was just awful. Like, and you're doing that all day, you know, it's just, and the guy's treating you like just super bad
garbage. Yeah.
And so like, then the next week they were like, hey, we need you to come back. And because it's a temp job, I was like, nope, I can't, I'm busy, I'm busy quotations, air quotes. Cause I was just like, no amount of money is worth what I'll find different work somewhere.
Yeah.
And then, oh, the other one that was, sorry, this is bringing back all these memories.
All right. So we have mausoleum, prepaid phone cards, wine distribution, lifting by hand, tons.
Yeah. So I actually kind of like the landscaping ones, that same cemetery. Oh, yeah.
That could be fun.
Yeah. So the cemetery where I did the mausoleum and stuff, then they had me come back and I worked for like a month, just doing landscaping,
groundskeeping.
Cool. And it was actually really peaceful.
I bet.
Just working in the grass and it was hard work, but like, I enjoyed that way more. I worked for Lazy Boy delivering furniture for a while.
Yeah.
Like a bunch of stuff like that.
Around that time, what I was doing to make money, I was working for Cutco.
Oh, that's selling knives.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah. Vector marketing.
Yeah.
And man, I've seen my boss from Cutco a few times driving around Portland, Vancouver area. And he's got like custom color Ferraris with his name on the license plate
crazy.
And stuff. It's like, dude. Homeboy must have sold some knives.
Those knives worked out for him. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So this other job, it was actually a landscaping job. So I was like, oh, cool. We're doing some landscaping stuff. Now, I grew up in Southern Oregon, which was a logging community for years until logging kind of died in Oregon in like the 90s. Spotted owl and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, all that kind of stuff. Which was a huge fiasco down in Southern Oregon, especially because there were so many mills and loggers and logging community.
Yeah.
But I saw some big trees get chopped down and these loggers would fall these trees. And I'd at least seen it. We had some trees on our property where I grew up where some guys came out and took these trees down. It was incredible to watch because they could just literally put a tree right where they wanted it.
Wow.
So we had a swimming pool in our house and we had this huge tree next to it that we had to take down because it died.
Yeah.
And those guys slotted that tree right between the pool and the house. Exactly. Where, I mean, they had like a 40-foot wide pathway to drop this thing. And they dropped it right. I mean, it was incredible. I was like, these guys are amazing. So I'd seen how logging is supposed to be done, how falling a tree is supposed to be done. So we're in Portland though, and I'm working temp jobs and I get out there and this guy is like, hey, we need to drop this tree. It was big enough. He needed a permit. It was over 40 feet tall. It was a big tree. And he's like, we need to drop this tree. So I'm going to saw it and you guys push it that way, because we need it to go that way so it doesn't fall on the house or these power lines. And I was like, I've seen enough logging to know that you don't push a tree anywhere.
Right.
Tree goes where it wants to go. You get out of the way.
Yeah.
Like there, and you're also at the base of a tree. So the guys that have seen it, they tie stuff high up on the tree. They use cables. They cut very specifically. And so this guy starts sawing and he gets the saw stuck. Mm-hmm. And because he doesn't know what he's doing.
Right.
And I was like, usually when I've seen this done, they cut a wedge and like, I don't even cut down trees. I'm explaining to him how to drop this tree based on what I saw actual loggers doing.
Right.
And I was like, this is bad.
This is dangerous.
This is real bad. So we get all the way down and it's like about ready to cut and go through. He's like, okay, guys, get in here, start pushing it that way. And so I like go over there, but I'm like, I am going to, as soon as this thing pops, I'm going to run as fast as I can.
Yeah.
Because I know that this tree is not going to go anywhere I try and push it.
Yeah.
It's going to go where it wants to go.
Yep.
So sure enough, he saws through and I just run away. just like, I'm out of here. I sprint away. The other guy who was young, he's like probably 20. He's there just like, oh, I'm going to push this thing. He doesn't know any better. So he's pushing as hard as he can. And I'm like, get out of there. I'm like yelling him to get out of there because the tree, of course, does not go where we want it to go. It's coming back towards us, towards the house and the power lines. Mm. And he's like, I'm going to get it. I'm like, get out of there. Get it. So he finally realizes as that tree's coming down, he's get out of there. So he starts running out of there. But he doesn't quite make it. Like, so he gets away from the tree.
Oh no.
But like the edges of one of the big limbs just clotheslines him.
Oh
just
no.
Lays him out. Like, fortunately it just smacked him. It didn't crush him. So it just sent him like tumbling. He just got like whacked by this tree limb.
Ouch.
And he hurt his shoulder, had to go to urgent care. Like he was done for the day.
Was that a temp guy
and
too?
Yeah. We were both temp guys. Yeah. And of course, so it actually fortunately didn't crush the house narrowly. Some of the limbs hit the roof and stuff. It went across their patio though, which, and probably 10 feet from the power lines.
Like, whoa.
It was close.
That's a big problem.
It was very scary.
Yeah.
And, again, this guy was like, this is like a Friday or something. He's like, hey, I need you guys to come back on Monday. We got two more trees to fall. And I was like, nope. I'm going to die if I come back and drop trees with you. So I only worked for him one day.
Awesome.
So I totally forgot where those stories. I totally forgot where we were at. We were talking about touring in a van and trailer with our newly married wives. So, went home for the summer, worked jobs, and then we moved into storage units with no apartments because we were going to be gone the entire year.
Right. Lindsay and I didn't have an apartment either.
Yeah. We just, it was like literally, I think if I recall that year, we were back home for a month total.
Total. Yep.
In like three different segments.
Right.
So like we came home for like a week, left again, came home for like 2 weeks.
And the longest chunk was near the holidays towards the end
like
of the year.
For like 2 weeks.
Yep.
Yeah. And we just literally lived in a van.
Yes, we
did. In trailer.
Yes, we did.
And drove all over. I think we did over 40,000 miles on our vehicle that year, if I recall.
Wow.
On the van.
And we were playing hundreds of shows that year. We were playing sometimes twice a night.
Yeah.
We were not at a lot of the festivals, as you had previously mentioned, because we were brand new. We hadn't been booked for festivals yet. But our bread and butter, so to speak, was youth groups, youth pastors, you know, young adults groups that were just like, oh, this is so exciting that there's this rock band that sounds like this now, you know?
Yeah. And I think we did over 250 shows that year.
I think so.
And then we also had, there were a lot of cool little venues that like a lot of these youth groups and stuff would like have a music, cause music concerts, Christian music concerts were really booming at that time.
Yeah.
So they had like bands come in like every week on a Friday or whatever. It was really fun. We also played the smallest show of our careers, including our pre-signed days. We had more people at our shows when we were just a local band.
Right. That's true.
This one show, was it five people that were there?
I think the total was 12 people. Five of them were the other band.
Yeah. So an additional seven people came to the show that wasn't the other band.
Yes.
And it was at a skate park.
Yep. And we played right in front of a big half pipe.
Yes. Where there was this annoying BMX cyclist who rode in the half pipe right behind us
the entire time.
We're like, what is this guy's deal? Who is this guy? Which later, years later, that guy was on a tour bus with us.
Yep.
Because he was the bass player in Disciple.
That's right. Joey Fife. Joey Fife was just like, no, man, I got to ride my bike, man. Yeah. I'm here throwing tricks. I'm going to throw this gnarly little 360 tailspin. I don't care about that band.
And when I remember being on the bus and it was like, wait, like we put all the pieces together.
Yeah, that was so funny.
It was so funny.
Very funny.
So yeah, just on the road constantly. But James, talk about the dynamic of being in a van and trailer and married.
Mm-hmm.
There's five dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And at this time, three of us were married. So five guys and three spouses in a 15-passenger van where we made the back seat into like a bed so different people could sleep while we were driving.
Yeah, rotate sleep schedules, yeah.
And talk about that a little bit because that's hard.
Yeah, well, that's tough. So eight people in a 15-passenger van and, you know, not just a trip for a few hours and that's your only trip that day. You know, we were doing every single day. All of our stuff is in the van, our backpacks, you know, day bags and stuff. And it was cramped, you know, and boys are smelly. especially if we go play a sweaty show and then get back in the van. So yeah, it was, you know, Lindsay and I were, very newlywed. We were just figuring out life. But I kind of look back on that and I think, you know, we didn't know any other way. Yeah. It's not like we had previous experience of like, this is what marriage feels like in this context. And now this is much more challenging and, you know, creating frustration or problems. And so that wasn't really the case. We just kind of accepted that that's what life was like, but you know, you gotta be space wise, like literally the physical limitations of the inside of a van. That's a lot of people in a van.
Yeah.
Also space wise, emotionally, different people have different needs about how much capacity they have for being crammed in with people like
totally.
That. And I'm one of those people, like I need to recharge by going to be alone.
Yeah.
You know? So that was tough. You know, and then there's just kind of the walking on eggshells around people when you can tell they've had kind of one of those newlywed arguments and, you know, or even just things like trying to be fair about like who gets to decide what music we're going to listen to next, stuff like that. It's funny how many things become a challenge when you try to combine multiple brand new families together.
When someone gets on the freeway on the wrong direction and goes north instead of south.
Yep.
And you end up at the Canadian border. You drove a fifth of the way across the country in the wrong direction.
Totally.
We have no food. Our pets' heads are falling off.
That is exactly what it felt like.
Yeah. Which did happen, by the way, because we didn't have GPS back then.
Yes.
We did end up at the Canadian border on accident.
Yeah, not the pets' heads part. Yeah. That didn't happen.
But so let me ask you, though, because we're 20 years removed from that now.
Yeah.
I've learned a lot. Would you do it differently or what would you do differently? If you, with what you know now, to go back with your marriage at that time and your wife and just where we were at, what would you change?
No, I wouldn't. I would change nothing about it. And maybe that's a different answer coming from me. Like that's personality driven. Mm-hmm. I have kind of learned through my life, which I've had a pretty challenging life in a lot of ways. And then not so much in by comparison too. So I'm objective about things like that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for example, and we'll get into this more, but like I grew up being physically abused by a stepfather and people have asked me like, if you could go back, would you change that? Well, certainly I would change that because that was horrible.
If you could not have that happen.
Of course.
That would be great.
But am I mad that it happened to me? All these years later, I have to say, no, I'm not, because that is part of my story and it helps me see the world around me differently. It helps me relate to others differently. It helps me have compassion and empathy for others in a different way or a deeper capacity, I guess. And so I think in the same way, looking back on that first tour with the Supertones and PAX 217 and Slick Shoes, and, you know, I still remember the very first night we were playing in Worcester, Massachusetts. At this place called the Palladium, really cool venue. And like I was so nervous. I got really dizzy right before we went on. It, like the room was spinning. I was super nervous. Wow. And then as soon as we hit that first note, I was like, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And it felt awesome to do that together, mm-hmm. and to have Lindsay there and to just be excited about it. And that was the exuberance of a 20-year-old, you know?
Totally.
That was, I was all in, and it was awesome. So I don't think I would change anything about that. It was, we earned our stripes, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. How about you? Would you change anything?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So this kind of comes into Christian culture.
Yeah.
The way I was raised.
Yeah.
In the church I was in. And just my worldview, ultimately, right? And I think this is a common problem in the church, honestly, is that the ideology that the mission comes above all else.
Oh.
That I am called to do this, and therefore I will do it at whatever expense is necessary.
Whatever cost. Whatever cost. Yeah. In all of my relationships are secondary to that.
Because God is first.
Right.
And he's called me to do this.
Right.
And therefore I will die on that hill.
But we've learned all these years later is honoring God in that way, following the calling, he's not necessarily expecting you to sacrifice all these relationships in your life.
Yeah.
That's not what he's asking from you at all. But that is sort of a cultural thing, a church culture-y thing that was kind of put on you.
Yeah. And I mean, how many pastors and church leaders have you seen that their families have suffered immensely because of how much they gave to the ministry?
Yeah. Dad loves everyone else.
Except for me.
We don't get any time with him.
Because he's so given to the ministry.
Yep.
That the family becomes a distant second.
Yeah. And that's a big problem for families. That's a big problem for kids to grow up fatherless, basically.
Yeah. And the weird thing is it's in a Christian home that looks wonderful.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, he's the pastor. He's this great spiritual leader, you know, all these other things. And they're doing great things for the kingdom, you know, and we justify it with all of these spiritual things. And so when I look back, and it's not that what we did was wrong. I'm not saying like, no, I wouldn't have brought my wife in the van and trailer with us.
Right. Wouldn't have done the tour. That's not what you're saying.
No. What I'm saying is if I could go back, I wish that I had the perspective that I have now of don't sacrifice things that ought not to be sacrificed. And I wish that I had done a better job of considering my wife's needs, wants, desires, her as a person, instead of just the mission that I was on.
Yeah.
And not that I didn't at all, but if I'm honest, I think it really paled in comparison to what I felt called to do, because I was, like you said, I was young, I was energetic, I was 100% in, and I can get really laser focused on whatever I'm doing.
Yes.
And so that's what I did.
Yeah.
I got super laser focused. I'm like, we're going to do this. We're going to do it the best ever. We're going to throw 110% into this.
Yeah.
And if I'm honest, I think that Shannon began to take a back seat to that. And she was on a roller coaster that she didn't really have any say in. Like when you get on a roller coaster, you go where that thing takes you.
Yeah.
Like it's going this way and there's not a whole lot I can do about it.
Yep.
And if I'm
all
honest,
all the loops and turns, you're strapped in.
And I feel like as I look back on those years that she was in a position, that's kind of what happened.
Yeah.
And then the other interesting piece of that was she didn't feel like she had the freedom to combat that. Because of the Christian culture of women submit to your husbands.
Right.
So she was like, I'm going to submit. I'm going to support you in the mission and vision that God has called you to. And I'm just going to take a back seat and go where this thing takes me.
So both of you in areas that are often misused and weaponized against people, both of you were really not capable to address this talk about it together and change your perspective on anything.
But we both thought we were doing the right thing.
Right.
We thought we were doing what God wanted us to do.
Right.
Because of what we were taught.
Right.
And I'm not saying that those things are wrong, that you shouldn't follow the calling that God has given you or, you know, be on mission in that way.
But they're taught and displayed with a lot of like unspoken pressure and expectations and and rules.
Yeah. And then a lot of the role that Shannon thought as a wife, that she was, how she was supposed to act and look and, you know, whatever, like there's a box that the Christian culture kind of creates for a wife. Right. Yeah. And they go to Proverbs 31 and say, well, here's what it looks like. And, and that gets shaped in a way, but I'm like, in Proverbs 31, she's buying and selling fields and doing business deals. And like, we don't talk about that part.
Yeah. You know, and Shannon's awesome at stuff like that.
Awesome at stuff like that. Yeah. So I think that for me, going back and looking at that perspective, I go, man, I wish that I had considered more what her calling was.
Yeah.
And if she's like, yes, this is what, and maybe she feels that way. Maybe she would have at that time been like, this is exactly what I want to be doing. Mm-hmm. But I think the issue was more, not even what we were doing. It was the way that it was done in that, like,
right.
I just wish I would have considered her and not allowed her to be in that back seat on a roller coaster that she couldn't control.
Yeah.
But to be a bit more in front.
It's ironic because by following those kind of cultural cues, neither of you really had the capability to do it together.
Yeah.
You were both kind of on your own, even though you were physically together.
Yeah. And one of the ways I've heard it said before, is like, we were like shoulder to shoulder working together, but not face to face relationally. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So like, we're getting stuff done. Yeah. We're on mission. She was taking care of the books, helping with merchandise, like supporting in so many physical ways. Like just, what do you need help with? I can do that. I can take care of that. And so we were getting stuff done shoulder to shoulder, just man, tours, music's going, stuff's growing, it's exciting. But then what I needed to do is face to face go, hey, what do you need? How are you doing? Mm. What do you care about?
Right.
Don't get lost in this. Like, 'cause I care about you as a person and who you are and your personality.
Right.
Don't become just the role that we need for right now. Be who you are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's a relational piece that's very different. And so now, like, and this was something that now I see in my life over the years, I've struggled with, because it's really easy to justify ministry and to justify sacrifices.
Yep.
And years later, I remember just kind of really being in a tough spot where I was like, God, what is going on? There's so much tragedy and just fallout in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, don't you see all that I've sacrificed for this cause and this mission? And like, you know, I did all these things to try and serve you, and it feels like it doesn't matter because the things that matter are broken.
Yeah.
And I really felt like God was kind of said to me, like, I didn't ask you to give up all that. I didn't ask you to do all that.
Right.
I didn't ask you to sacrifice those things.
Right.
I just asked you to be faithful to me.
Right.
But those, you took it to the next step.
Right.
Of like, well, being faithful to God looks like doing this, 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 and this.
Right.
And that's been that's a thing that has come back around that I feel guilt from. I feel sadness from. 'Cause you look back in your life and you're like, oh man, especially people you really care about that were affected by it.
Yeah.
My wife, my kids.
Yeah.
Both of them have been greatly affected by our ministry, by our music, by our touring, by our lives, in ways that break my heart, honestly, because they have trauma from living life with me, you know? So I guess when I go back and I look at those days in the van and trailer, for me personally, it wasn't that I think we shouldn't have had our wives with us necessarily. It's that I wish I would have given more consideration to who she was as a person and allowed her to be face to face in that and relationally, and a part of it in that aspect, and not just logistically, right? And that's been a huge shift in my thinking today of like, you know what? I'm not gonna sacrifice everything for the mission. Like, God's not asking me to do that. He's just asking me to love him and love my family. And
if we trust him,
he'll
show us the way to include all of it together.
Yeah.
'Cause that's who he is and that's how he does it.
And I'm so thankful that my wife is gracious.
Yeah.
And is still married to me.
Amen. Yeah.
But I think it was boy, what an incredibly difficult circumstance to put a new marriage in for yep. both of us.
Yeah.
And really thankful for our spouses, our wives who have been just so faithful and just in the trenches with us.
Yes.
To this very day. Mm-hmm. Well, on a lighter note, we did tease a story about a deer carcass being drugged.
I suppose you should explain that.
From yes. Texas all of the way to Los Angeles.
Right.
So I was driving, I think we were driving from Dallas to LA
right.
straight. It is a 24-hour drive.
Yeah.
And we drove straight, just 24 hours straight. And we took turns, but I'm like the night owl.
Right.
So I drove all night. And mm-hmm. like, I think I tried to hand it off to one of the other guys and they drove like an hour and were like falling asleep. And I was like, okay, fine. I'll just keep driving. So we drove all night. And I remember we were driving Western Texas, like
yeah.
middle of nowhere,
right.
just brown dirt. And, there was roadkill in the middle of the road. And I was like, you know, just driving along. I was like, oh, like, so I was like, I'm going to drive over that to where I don't hit it with my tires.
Yeah.
So it'd go, you know, and as I got close, I mean, we're on the freeway, so we're going kind of fast.
Yeah.
And I got close. I was like, oh, that's big.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's really tall. I was like,
and moving a van and trailer out of the way.
Yeah.
You're not quick with that. And if you are, disaster.
It's danger. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm committed now. Like
yep.
it's going between the wheels underneath the van. That's yep. just what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so I go over it and I was kind of like, cringing because I was like, that's tall enough that
yeah.
like, I hope it doesn't hit anything. And
yeah.
the van makes it. And so I'm like about to breathe a sigh of relief. And then I feel
oh.
our trailer did not clear it.
Right.
And so like, you know, the little crank that you crank down, it has like a wheel at the bottom for when you take the trailer off the hitch and you park it somewhere.
Right.
So that pole kind of was sticking down a little bit
right.
below the hitch.
Yeah. The hand crank part.
And so that pole just
covered in deer meat.
Oh man. And then the axle of the trailer.
Oh yeah.
Also
That's
was
right.
not tall enough.
Right.
And so I think it was a deer. I don't even honestly know. Cause it was really big.
It was definitely a hooved animal.
Yeah, it was some sort of hooved animal because we found the hoof and
other chunks.
What? It was really more like a leather hide by the time we drug it all the way to LA. Mm,
yes, good comparison.
Wrapped around the axle.
Yeah.
And there was just gore all over the back
yes.
of the trailer. I mean, it
yes.
was splattered red
yes.
grossness.
And smelly.
Oh my goodness, it smelled so bad.
So we went to like a car wash.
Yes.
Like one of those kind of like where you kind of pull into a bay and you pull the wands off the wall and you pump a quarter
yes.
in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. we pull in this car wash. Now, mind you, we're in Southern California now.
Yeah.
So like people are like pulling their BMWs in to wash their car.
Yeah.
And we pull in with our bloody, smelly trailer.
Yeah.
With
their cars are powered by avocados and we pull in with deer carnage everywhere.
And we're like, we just have to get this off of our trailer. This is disgusting. So we're spraying it down and
right.
cleaning it all up. And like, I remember trying to get the pressure washer underneath there because we're trying to get the
yeah.
hoof off of the axle
yeah.
like we're like it's like wrapped around it
yeah.
and like so we finally get the thing cleaned up and we're like okay good like our trailer's not and we pull out of the car wash
out of the bay
yeah out of the bay and we look back and there's deer parts
detritus
yeah the hoof and like a leg and
yeah.
like in the drain
yeah
and as I recall we were like I'm not touching that
yeah.
and we're like I'm not touching that. So we drove off.
Oh.
So I'm sure somebody rolled in their Mercedes or BMW and got out of their car to wash it and was like, oh, what is
yeah.
that? So I like to picture what possibly could have happened.
Yeah.
After
I bet they like sued the car wash,
oh, gosh.
Made $1 million off their lawsuit and then sold PayPal.
Oh. it was so gross though.
Yeah.
It was so gross. So things on the road that, I mean, I couldn't have made that story up. Like, I'm still fascinated at how it stayed on our trailer from Texas to California.
New Mexico, Arizona.
Yeah. Went
Los Angeles.
We drug it all
yeah.
the way through all that,
yep.
doing 70 miles an hour. How fast
yeah.
we were going, right? Like, I'm blown away that it stayed on our vehicle the entire
yeah.
time. But yeah, funny stories from the road.
We got lots of them.
Yeah. We got more coming.
We got more coming.
More coming at you for our next episode. We're excited about it. Thank you so much for joining us. Yes. On Rockin' a Hard Place. It's been fun.
Yes. Stay tuned for episode 3. We're so glad you guys are listening. Thank you so much for your kind comments. Subscribe. Tell people about it. Yeah. We want to grow.
Yeah. We got more stories coming. Next episode, we're going to keep talking about some of these phases of our band. We're going to go deep again on, like, today we talked about marriage and, you know, we want to talk about some of the hard things and hard stuff. Yeah. And so we're excited as we just continue to tell our story. Yeah, make sure you follow us on our socials, Official Cutlass on Instagram, Facebook, just Cutlass on Twitter. We're easy to find. And yeah, let us know what you think of the podcast and listen to our 20 EP if you haven't heard it yet.
That's
too,
right.
Just came out. So thank you guys so much. We'll see you next time.
That's right. We love you guys. Bye.